Hi, I'm Aeneas Williams. Welcome to the Players Podcast. Today, I'm excited to spend time with Coach Bill Cowher, and I can't wait. Did you know that he was actually a Wolfpack, played for Lou Holtz? And some of the stories that he will share has to do not only with the triumphs, but with the adversities. So Heart of Steel is a book that he's written, and I can't wait for each of you all to hear this. Let's listen in. It's fascinating, Coach, because you coach Rod Woodson as well as Frank Minifield. Frank in Cleveland, obviously Rod in with the Steelers. Both of those guys had significant impact on my vision as to what type of player I wanted to be.
Yeah.
What was it like coaching those guys?
You know, it was really, you know, I was blessed to be able to have talent of that nature. You know, when I was in Cleveland, I went to go coach defensive backs in the East, and Marty Schottenheimer said, "You're going to coach defensive backs." I go, "Well, I never even played defensive back before." So we sat down, talked about the techniques, and I had probably the most fun coaching them. Coaching the deep Felix Wright and Al Gross and Chris Rockins. And I had Hanford Dixon in Minifield, my first 2 years. And I had played with these guys earlier. So I walked into that meeting, you know, with Minifield and Dixon. You're like, "So you're coaching us?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And so I learned a lot about preparation. Because I said, if they asked me a question, I said, "I may not have the answer now, but I'll get back to you and have the answer." And then I go to Kansas City. Who's my two corners? Albert Lewis and Kevin Ross, one of the best secondaries with Lloyd Burris and Deron Cherry. So now I get a chance to go to Pittsburgh. Who's the corner? It's Rod Woodson, David Johnson, Carnell Lake. Okay, so secondary players, I've been blessed to have some very, very talented ones in the course of my coaching career.
But what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Did you have these great players because they were talent in and of themselves, or great coaching helps bring out the best in great players?
You know, Aeneas, I think you have to have a degree of talent to play in a secondary. But if you can apply the talent with being a student of the game, which to me is that's the great ones separated themselves. When I came in there to the building, Rod Woodson was already in there. When I came into the building, Troy Polamalu was already in there. They're studying tape. They're looking for the competitive edge, looking for a split. Maybe a stance that would give them a feeling for what the play is going to be. Look at the backfield set. So you take talent and you have to have something to work with. But then if they can apply the little things, you can enhance that with, you know, let's try this. And then give them the leeway to be confident enough to feel free enough to trust their instincts, right? Like you. I mean, I you're not making those interceptions because I coached you that way. But hopefully in terms of your preparation, I helped you feel confident enough, instinctive enough to make that decision.
You mentioned about being a player, what players you end up coaching. What's that nuance like? My dad was trained as a master manager, and he said, when you're an employee, you're an employee. When you become a manager, you have to think differently than an employee. What was that like?
You know, it's interesting. As I go back to the book, you know, I got coming out Heart and Steel, and it's kind of a memoir, and it talks about my upbringing. Like you talked about, my father was an accountant, and I was good with numbers, but I was always had to work. And I was very appreciative of the coaches and the teachers that I had along the way, the mentors that you have. And I just feel like, you know, when you look at teaching or coaching, it is, you are being a teacher. You're being a father. I used to always say I had three girls at home and 52 boys at work. And because they were my kids. Yeah, it's so funny. I always remember, I said, always three things I used to start off every training camp with. I said, and the same things I talked to my daughters about. It's, you know, when you talk about leadership, you talk about holding people accountable when you're in that position. You know, a lot of times accountability is about decision-making, right? And so that's the same thing you're talking to your kids about. And I said, there's first thing is choices and consequences. And Marty Schottenheimer said this to me at one point, and I have this in the book. I learned, he says, you have control over your choice, but once you make your choice, it controls you. So think about choices and consequences. And I think it's very true for your kids. I think it's very true for players. Number two is the people you surround yourself with. We all know, Ninas, you know as well as I do, you know, sometimes family becomes one of the toughest things to deal with when you have started to have success. You know, the entourage that comes around when all of a sudden you're popular again. So the people you surround yourself with will also influence the decisions that you make. So I always wanted to be around purpose-driven people. Not people that are just happy to be living in the now, but people who are purpose-driven. And the last one is probably the most important one, which I think I had just as much with my players as I did with my daughters. Nothing good happens after midnight. So, right. You know, when you think about that as a coach, that's the kind of, I guess, leadership and insight you're trying to give to your players.
It's a segue into the book. In the book, you talk a lot about passion. And I guess the first question I ask you, when you put up the film on watching a prospective player coming out of college, I would assume passion oozes out when you're looking at a player. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because there's so many different ways. You're looking at the passion. You're looking at the effort. You're trying to talk with the people around them. Then you have to make the decision, can I get a little bit more out of him? Can I get him to do this all the time? I see it. I see flashes of it. But if I can get this guy to do it all the time, I can get a pretty special player. So then you have to go back into, again, as we talk about anything else, it's someone's upbringing. Who's the most influential person in that person's life? Who are they listening to, you know, when they're having some hardships? Because I say, you know, to me, life is about hardships, opportunities, and lessons, right? And that's, to me, what this book is about. A lot of those things mold who you are as people. So if you can find a way of understanding those players, who are they, where have they come from, and it's look at their talent and the system they're in, and can we get more out of them? Can we get it more on a consistent basis? So all those little intangibles you're looking for when you look for a player, but it does start with, is football important to them? And that has to be number one.
And you said football is important. You said, can I get, how do you know? I know you said I talked to who influenced them. How do you know that something's left in the tank that they're not, it, for whatever reason, is not being pulled out at the collegiate level?
Well, I think a lot of times you don't totally know. I mean, it's hard to really know the background of someone as you get ready to watch someone for a draft. As you start to get this information in about a 3-month period of time, you know, obviously the one-on-one, the face-to-face, the eye-to-eye, when you talk to players, where it's unscripted. I need to have unscripted conversations with you because I think at some point through the course of that conversation, I'll see whether or not you are a manufactured response. This is what you've been taught to say, or are you speaking from the heart? So I think that sometimes you have to talk to people face to face, and sometimes working with people face to face. As I said, even in this book, you know, my first coaching staff, I never worked with any of these guys before. And until you work with a player, until you work with a coach, until you work with people, we don't really know who they are, right? Because until you face adversity, until you have to handle success, then you see how people respond to certain things. And that's when you really find out who they really are.
Where does passion come from?
It comes from the heart. It comes from a belief. It comes from a love of something, a pride in something, a desire to do something, you know, to be special, you know, to prove somebody else wrong. You know, something, it's something that burns inside you that just pushes you to another level. And if you see it, and I think that sometimes, it's, you know, those are the things that we have to look for.
I'm sorry, Coach. It sounds like passion can be derived from players from different areas. So it's not all the same.
No, it isn't. It isn't the same. And some guys are passionate about it, but don't show it. Other guys show it, but they're really not passionate about it, right? So, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, like a great teacher does with all his students, some people can learn verbally. Some people need to be on the board. You know, some people, they become a little bit, you know, isolated. Some people are just being outward. So it's trying to get to know the player, the person, and finding the right buttons to get them to be pushed, where you can try to make them better than they really are, and to consistently push that button, but also making sure that you don't lose them in the process.
I had no idea, knowing my fellow teammate, Torrey Holt, that you are a fellow Wolfpack.
Yeah, I am, NC Stater.
Yeah, and I never knew Coach Lou Holtz coached at NC State. What was it like being recruited by Coach Lou Holtz?
Well, Lou Holtz, he came into my house when I was a senior in high school in Western Pennsylvania, and just totally enthralled my father. And so I only had two scholarship offers coming out of high school. One was to William & Mary and one was to NC State. And NC State, I think, is just because they had an extra scholarship. I was a very skinny kid. I couldn't run fast, just as a football player. You know, so I went down there and played for Coach Holtz for 1 year before he left to go to the Jets. But Coach Holtz had a presence about him in a meeting room. And he was one of those guys that just, you know, when he spoke, you didn't question anything. You just did it. And he was quite impactful.
And knowing, having played for Coach Lou Holtz at the collegiate level, were you surprised now that you've coached in the NFL as an NFL head coach? Or is it surprising to you that Coach Holtz didn't last very long coaching in a head coach in the NFL?
Well, you know, I think he could have, but sometimes in this, it's where you go. For Coach Holtz to have his first stint in the NFL with the New York Jets, with the New York media, with the New York players in the NFL at a time where he's going to try to institute curfews. Are you kidding me? So it was like that was not going to go over real well, or like it was not going to be totally accepted like you would when you walk into a college, you know, meeting room. Whatever you say, the players are saying, yeah, I'll do it. You go into a pro meeting room the first day, you're going to say something or say, why? Why do I have to do it? So that's what you have to get used to in the pro level, is that you got players who are really good at every school around the country. Right. And they come in and you're trying to bring everybody together and ask them to leave their egos at the door. Just know they can leave their egos at the door, but don't challenge because they have egos. Now what you're trying to do is bring everybody together. So you had better be a much better listener at the pro level than you were at the college level.
So that's interesting. You said a much better listener.
Yes.
Tell me, what are you listening for at the pro level?
You're listening to these players who excel at a very high level, at the college level. And you're instituting systems and maybe changing, asking them to change a certain technique. Well, be a little flexible with that. If they're good at what they do, you be more adjustable and work with them and adjust halfway. So you need to have conversation. A lot of times I feel like in college, you're just telling them what to do. You're giving them the technique. You're telling them this is what it is because they're just learning the game. Now you've got players who have played the game at a very high level coming from all over the world, different socioeconomic upbringings. And you're trying to bring this everybody together and ask them to be selfless, to be part of a team. Well, there's got to be a little give and take as that relates. So dealing with people, relationship building is a big part of being successful as being a leader. Like I said, great leaders are great listeners. They're not just telling people what to do. They're listening to where that person's at and helping them and directing them and inspiring them along the way.
What's one of the most important things that you learned from Coach Marty Schottenheimer?
Preparation. He left no stone unturned. You know, there was two guys in the East, and I talk about it. You know, I was so blessed to have a great parents, instituted great moral values in me. But Marty Schottenheimer, I played for him. I coached for him. You know, he was such a student of the game. And to him and for me, it was just making sure that everybody knew what their responsibilities were. You know, he would not let, we couldn't just do things if we wanted to do it. We had to make sure we told them, okay, whatever happened, they go empty set, they motion here, they motion there. But they can't do that, coach, because we're going to have one more than they can rush with. Well, what if they can? So we had to cover every scenario. And so when Sundays came, we had everything covered. So preparation was everything. And his consistency with which he messaged the team. He could message the team in different ways. But it was the same message, very consistent. Players listened, players responded. His record speaks for himself. And I think I went to the next level from Dan Rooney. I learned the element of of not be afraid to make tough decisions, but also developing a family environment. Between those two people, Dan Rooney and Marty Schottenheimer, they helped mold not just the coach I am today, the husband I am today, and the father I am today.
You get your first head coaching job at age 34?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, Aeneas, so how about this one? So I grew up in Western Pennsylvania. I go back in there to interview. Mr. Rooney offers me the job. I go back to Kansas City. I'm laying in bed and I'm thinking to myself, wow, wow, wow. If I don't screw this up, I can go back to my 20th high school class reunion as a head coach of my hometown team. So my whole goal was for 3 years not to get fired. So I can go back to my 20th high school class reunion as my hometown team. And how about this? We had our 20th class reunion, right? Right before we go to the Super Bowl. But we have it on a river cruise. So I go on this river cruise. I can't get off the boat for 3 hours. We had just lost an AFC championship to the San Diego Chargers that the year before. I got all the guys I went to high school with telling me all the things we did wrong in that game and all the things we should be doing better for the following year. So what I learned from that, lesson learned from this, don't get on a river cruise with your college guys or high school guys when you can't get off. I was on there and I said, yes, you're right. You're right and you're right. I was absolutely wrong. I'll take your advice. What time is it? We almost off this cruise.
So, Coach Ben, you say you got offered the job, you go back to Kansas City, you're in your bed, and you're laying down. So the question is, did you have any inkling that they would offer you the job, or was this, okay, well, let me do interviews?
Well, I did the interviews. This was like the last interview that I did with them, and I had gone through a series of about 2 weeks where Mr. Rooney would call me when I was in Kansas City and just kind of ask about the family. We really never talked football. I came in for a second interview, and that's when he offered me the job. And I never put myself in a position. I was just, you know, my name was up. I was coordinator. We had pretty good defense in Kansas City. I was up the year before for the Cleveland Browns job. Bill Belichick got that. And ironically enough, Bill and I have been good friends. And we had shared a lot when he was a coordinator with the Giants and I was in Kansas City. We go both become finalists for the Browns job in 91. He gets it. I go back to Kansas City. We're still pretty friendly. And all of a sudden next year, I go to the Pittsburgh Steelers, went from friends to adversaries right overnight. Didn't talk much after that. So, I got it. And like I said, I was, you know, 34 years old following Chuck Knoll, the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the expectations that go with being there, 4 Super Bowls. And it was pretty daunting.
Tell us, what is the culture with the Steelers to have such longevity with head coaches? You're a young coach. Coach Tomlin's young.
And Coach Knoll and Aeneas, it's funny because we were all hired around that age of 34 to 36, right? And we all came into this football team that was run by, you know, the first was the chief, then it was Dan, now it's Art. This family atmosphere that you walk into and you could just feel it. And they were about the people of Pittsburgh. You know, it was you weren't just playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're playing for a blue collar, you know, football team that represents the people. And I said, I get it. I grew up here. I get it. You know, we're going to be lunch pail. We're going to come to work. We're going to do their job. No matter who gets the credit. Well, you know, whatever happens is going to happen. We're going to go back tomorrow. We're going to bring our lunch pail again, and we're going to do the same thing. That's just who we are. We work hard. We like to win. We love to compete. We're going to take great pride in everything we do. We know what we represent. We represent a city that is made of powerful people, hardworking people. So that was kind of what we established. And I think when you think about each coach that they went there from Chuck, as I picked it up, to now turn it over to Mike. And, you know, I think that, again, the one stability thing, one stable thing is that the Rooney family has been in charge of that whole thing. They let you coach your football team, just like with your family. A lot of times there's going to be bumps along the way. You work through it. You talk through it. But you don't have to be so quick to make changes. You work through the tough times because when you work through the tough times, it makes for the better times.
Thank you, Coach. One of the head coaches that we're calling modern football history, one of the best, Coach Bill Belichick. What are some of the things you learned from Bill?
Truthfully, humility. I think Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, and I talk about them both in this book, I learned so much. I know Bill Parcells did a great job of using the media to send messages to his team. And it took me a while to realize, well, you can do that. I see what he's doing now. Bill Belichick would win games. He's on to the next game, whether he wins or loses. He's not sitting there. His humility with how they played, which is why they were so consistent year in and year out. He never got caught up in it. You know, I used to say, you know, everything's about, you know, life is about perspective, right? The perspective is so much a part of dealing with it. And I'd say this to the team every year. You know, it's a roller coaster ride. You can't get too high with the highs or too low with the lows. And I said, think about this. You're never as good as you think you are. And you're never as bad as they say you are. It's never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it appears. Because part of going through a season is trying to keep balance, trying to keep everything in perspective. And I think if you're able to do that, and those two coaches were always able to do that, you're going to get the same result week in and week out. Try to make every game personal. Don't get caught up in the win streaks. Don't get caught up in the losing. So I learned a lot of that through those two coaches.
Now, no one probably that follows football would have connected the word humility with those two coaches.
Yeah. But when you think about them, when you think about their respect for the game, they both respect the game. And if they ever felt like someone on their side was disrespecting the game, they weren't there. They didn't put up with it. You know, so I wouldn't want to say that's old school, because I think today players respect the game. It's just a different game. But I think that the one thing that you learn about that is it's not about them. It's about the team. It's about being selfless. It's about preparation. It's about hard work. And that, you know, it's not about any one player. It's about a team. And so I think both those guys, I think that they exemplify that.
I keep hearing the word preparation over and over again.
Yeah.
Why?
You prepare, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you knew your opponent. I mean, you're not going to get by in the National Football League in this just with your talent. And there's a lot of great players that come into this league and they figured it's been so easy at every level. Right here, this is a new level now. If I can do anything as a coach to get you to understand how important the preparation is, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the little things in practice, the little things you're looking for when you watch tape, is to sit there and say, so did you watch this game? Yeah, I watched it. What'd you take out of it? What do you mean? Well, you don't just watch it like a fan. Watch it as a professional. Look for the little idiosyncrasies, the little competitive edge that you could get from them. You see anything in his stance? What about this formation? How about that motion? Do you see his eyes? Look at his knuckles. Go look at the end zone. Watch more end zone tape, because that's how you're going to see the game. So it's trying to teach players how to prepare, because a lot of people don't know how to prepare. But isn't that what teachers do? Teach you how to do your homework. Do your homework. You know, you got to get a test. If you don't do your homework, I guarantee you're not going to pass the test. Well, homework is preparation of football. Your test is on Sunday. But if you're not doing your work during the week, you're going to fail your test.
Wow. As we transition to your first wife, Kay, that's adversity. How did you manage to make it through losing a spouse?
You know, it was not easy. No, it was not easy to talk about in this book. You know, I got with Michael Hawley, and thank God Michael Hawley was the perfect person to collaborate with. I said, Michael Hawley, I used to get done. I spent over 40 hours talking with him. I talked to him. He was almost like a licensed therapist for me. When you talk about a period of time of 2010, you know, I'd stepped down from the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was a family decision. And again, it was elaborated in there in the book. But I went on, and, you know, my wife had been with me since college, and we had three daughters, and she had dedicated her life to being my partner. And she was the backbone of our family. Our daughters were very grounded. She allowed me to be who I was at work, and at times told me how I could be better. You don't have to be so loud. You don't have to be yelling and cursing on the sideline. Okay, you're right. Okay. And I'd come home, and I was not even a head coach. I wasn't even a coordinator at home, because the girls were a coordinator. I was like an assistant coach. I just told what to do. So she just had the great perspective and balance that our family had. And when she got diagnosed with cancer, going through that with her, it was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in this. And ironically, my father in 2010 died 3 months before my wife did. So I dealt with the loss of my father, then dealt with the loss of my wife. And it was hard. You know, and grieving is something that's very personal. I talk about it in the book. I don't know if I did the right thing. I did what I thought was the right thing. I was me. And we were a very close family. We respected my wife very much. And we worked through it. And to the point of even today, being married now to my current wife, V, who is a musician, really not much of a background in sports. She was a perfect person to come in. Women have been a big part of my life, from my mom, to Pat Rooney, to Pat Schottenheimer, to Kay, to my three girls, to my wife, Veronica Stigler, V, as I call her. They've given me balance. I always said part of life is three things. It's transition. We're all transitioning from one phase to another. You better have a great perspective. If you have a great perspective on life, as I said before, it's never as good as it seems, appears, never as bad as it seems. You gotta have great balance in your life. I have faith. Faith in my life, family in my life, women in my life. So they've given me great balance in a man's world of football. The good Lord has given me faith that I believe in fate. I also believe that it doesn't just tell you where you're going. That you have to apply core values along the way, decision-making. You control your own fate to a degree, but there is a degree of fate that will take place. And the good Lord will give you nothing you can't handle. So I've continued to grow through the period of this transition from coaching to CBS, from being grown up in Little Pittsburgh to living right now in New York City. But isn't everybody else probably having a lot of the same story? And if this book can inspire anybody or help somebody who's gone down that path of hardship, opportunity, and lessons, and trying to make the right decision, then that's worth it.
It's I can't wait to see you in Canton, my future and fellow enshrining. Congratulations. Seeing the big David Baker, the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think he showed up on your set. Is that correct?
He did, Aeneas. He did show up on our set. And I got to tell you, being down there, we lost a brother, Kevin Green, right? And you represent the Gold Jacket as well as anybody. And you spoke to us about the responsibility that we have, the obligation that we have, the opportunity that we have to use our platform to make a difference. You, Aeneas, are making a difference as well. I thank you. I look forward to you. And hey, you now get to finally play for me and play with me. So this will be great.
Well, Coach, I'm excited to get a copy of your book, Heart of Steel. And a lot of what we talked about in the podcast will be in that book. And I'm looking forward to getting a copy.
Thanks, Aeneas. See you in Canada.
And the best is yet to come.
To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.